House General Government Committee meeting. We have, I think, what will be a fairly brief agenda this morning. I'm going to start by opening a public hearing on House Bill 3335. No one has signed up to speak, and it's a good thing because this committee, this particular bill, I believe, is not quite ready for prime time, and so I'm going to tell you that we will discuss it later and close the public hearing on House Bill 3335. And then I'm going to open a public hearing on SJM 6. Kara? And Kara will talk about that for a minute.
Happy to. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Joint Memorial 6 speaks to urging Congress to fund a study of the National 1855 Treaty Trail so that the National Park Service may designate this trail as a National Historic Trail for the sesquicentennial of 1855 treaties. And as a little background, I've learned that in 1855, Joel Palmer, who is not just a namesake of a wonderful restaurant, was superintendent of Indian Affairs for the Oregon Territory. And in 1855, he journeyed from Seattle to the Dalles and then on to Judith River, Montana, for the purpose of negotiating treaties with Native American tribes. During the expedition, Superintendent Palmer negotiated 11 treaties, including one with the tribes of Middle Oregon, and that confirmed the rights to the Warm Springs Indian Reservation, the Walla Walla Tribe, and others, and that confirmed the right to the Umatilla Indian Reservation, and he also negotiated a treaty with the Nez Perce. The sesquicentennial of the 1855 treaties is set to occur this year, and SJM 6 urges Congress to fund a study of a national 1855 treaty trail tracing this historic journey in the fiscal year 2005 budget for the National Park Service and to direct the Park Service to proceed with the study.
Thank you, Kara. There's no one signed up to speak on this, so I will explain to the committee that when you have a joint memorial that you're sending to Congress and you have a member of this body who's headed for Washington, D.C. shortly, it helps a lot if it's hand-carried. So that's part of the reason that we are moving this very smartly along today. And I believe we are scheduled for work sessions.
Yes, you are.
Without questions, are we open for a work session or do I need to open one?
You need to close the public hearing.
I will close the public hearing and open a work session on Senate Joint Memorial 6. Do I have a motion?
Madam Chair, I'll make a motion that we move Senate Joint Majority or SJM 6 to the House floor with a due pass record.
With a due adopt. I knew you did. I knew that. Representative Cameron moves SJM 6 to the floor with a due adopt recommendation. Any objection? So ordered. Anybody want to explain this piece of history? Any volunteers for the floor? Come on. Somebody wants to.
I'll do it.
Now. I don't know.
It doesn't matter. I'll do it myself.
It doesn't matter. Whatever.
Representative Buckley can do it.
Madam Chair, Hans Bernard just walked in.
we're done. We love it.
I appreciate that very much. My apologies for running a little bit late. Wanted to thank the committee.
You need to get, we're still in, I can still hear testimony in public hearing and we have are in work session and we are not in, out of work session yet, so why don't you sit in the chair, identify yourself, and tell us quickly what you want us to hear since you made it.
Hi. It's been a rather hectic week, as I'm sure you can imagine. My name for the record, Michael Mason, lobbyist for the Confederate Tribes of the Warm Springs. And tribal officials wanted to be here today, but as you can imagine, they're quite busy bringing the message of their historic agreement yesterday, details of that to the members and the public. So I want to thank Chair Berger and members of the House General Government Committee for so promptly hearing SDM 6, and clearly so promptly that I wasn't even here. So, again, I apologize. But this is truly an amazing story, and I know you've read the memorial, but it is astounding, the work that was accomplished by people not having the internal combustion engine or the railroad to work with, to cover the ground from Cosmopolis, Washington on the coast, all the way to into Montana to the Judith River in 11 months, doubling back in that process from Walla Walla back down to the Dalles to make the treaty that, of course, so much affected my clients, the Confederate Tribes of the Warm Springs. But the, this is, for those of us who have, particularly, I guess, who have Oregon Trail ancestry, this was a critical, critical historic venture. In my case, my family arrived just a few years after the treaty was signed in Kirk County. And I think for any of us that are in Oregon now or have that heritage, we should be grateful to Joel Palmer, who was later a speaker of this house, and to the very far-sighted tribal leaders, with Federated Tribes of the Warm Springs and the other tribes that were involved, for making these historic agreements. So I would be happy to answer questions. You have the testimony of Louis Pitt, Jr. in front of you, the Government Affairs and Planning Director for the Warm Springs, their highest civil servant. I would just say that you are all invited to the 150th anniversary of their treaty, June 24th through 26th at Warm Springs. This year, I know that's going to be shortly after Sine Die, so you should be able to make
right.
it.
Yeah.
But again, I just say all Oregonians and all citizens of the Oregon country should remember this treaty journey, which continues today, and thank you for your consideration and support.
And thank you for coming. I'm sorry we were so quick, but the carrier that's been assigned might want to meet with you for a more elaborate history piece, Representative Buckley. He might.
That would be lovely. At your convenience, we'd be glad to do that.
Very good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I'm sorry, we're just very efficient around here. And
appreciate the efficiency.
And we appreciate that you did come and offer testimony. Okay. If nobody else, I'm going to close the work session on SJM 6 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2911. Kara, do you want to... This should be familiar to members of the committee that went to Medford, because we heard about this in Medford.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, HB 2911 increases the threshold amount that local governments may spend and receive to qualify for either an annual in-lieu or review statement for the Secretary of State Audits Division. It allows local governments to apply for exemption from review and audit requirement if, due to a one-time transaction, they exceed the threshold amount. It permits local governments to apply for a time extension if needed to submit reports to the Secretary of State, and it changes the receipt and expense threshold for in-lieu exemptions from $150,000 to $250,000, and changes the review threshold from $150,000 to $500,000 for total revenue and expenses to $250,000 to $600,000. Current law requires municipal governments with larger budgets to have an annual audit completed by a licensed municipal auditor and to submit a copy of that report to the Secretary of State. Governments with smaller budgets qualify for a review. A review is a less involved form of audit, and in lieu, you'll recall, is when an organization is its budget is so small that they simply fill out the paperwork, turn that into annually to the Secretary of State. But the person who is charged with the financial responsibility for those very small governments, the organization carries a fidelity bond on that individual.
Thank you, Kara. Questions of Kara? We have some folks here to talk about this. Phil Hopkins from Secretary of State's office. Would you come forward, please? And
morning.
Good morning.
For the record, my name is Phil Hopkins. I'm an audit manager with the Secretary of State Audits Division. I'm here primarily to just be of service to the committee. The Secretary of State's position on this bill is neutral. We're not a position one way or the other. The fact that there is consideration to raise the limits seems reasonable. To what amount? Well, obviously that has to be determined by you. However, I do have a question. It's not clear to us. And when it relates to Section 4 of the bill, and it has to do with this exemption from an audit or review for non-recurring transactions, and those non-recurring transactions could go up to 2 years.
We don't have a Section 4.
Are we on the same bill, sir?
2911?
Right.
There is no Section 4.
Are you talking about page 2, number 4?
Talking about subsection 4 of one of these sections?
I'm sorry, subsection 4.
Thank you.
I got the wrong bill. It's my bill.
Okay, proceed.
Page 2. What's about it is what the drafter of this bill or those who are sponsoring this bill, what is intended and how do we define non-recurring transactions? And what I mean by that is we are aware, as you know, since all the reports are filed with our office, we are aware of unusual circumstances that do occur, you know, to districts alike, you know, on occasion, whether they be in the form of an occasional large expenditure or a one-time grant or a one-time issuance of debt or go to the bank to borrow $100,000 to buy a fire truck. I mean, we're aware of those kinds of things, but I guess my concern is, because being the administrator of this program, is that it's kind of vague, and what I would like to know is what is the committee intending by this non-recurring transaction,
I think
so that we can put a handle on defining that.
Yes, Representative Escobar.
Madam Chair, I think he's hit on exactly what was said in Medford. You're talking about the same things that the individuals that asked me to bring this forward, which was a CPA and a former representative, you're giving the same examples that they gave. So the intent is exactly what you've outlined. Now, if you want specificity, I'm not sure you can do that because it could be an anomaly of some kind that we're unaware of. Because if you don't cover them, when you get specificity, then you have a problem.
Right. Chair Berger, Representative Escobar. What I was thinking about was we have in our auditing standards and our generally accepted accounting principles, we have situations that are identified such as extraordinary items, and they result in special placement in the financial statements. And those are things that are considered infrequent and unusual in occurrence. Okay. We also, in our auditing standards and accounting principles, we have things called special items. And by the way, going back to that first issue, that'd be things like, I don't know, a hurricane happens, the building burns down. You know, these are obviously infrequent, unusual, not planned for, not expected. You know, but then we also have in our standards, we have things called special items. Now, those things are within the control of a board or the management as per se, which means that they could obviously go out and issue debt, right? Issue a bond and have debt and stuff like that. So I'm trying to get a feel for this because where I'm coming from on this is, by way of example, just last week alone, I had a firm called me about a government that did not want to be audited this year, and of course I asked why, and they said, well, we're in the third year of a grant. We don't always get grants, but we had three. This is the third and final year of a grant. We were subject to a review before. The last 2 years we've had an audit. And now this last year, $17,000 is left in that grant, and that $17,000 has now pushed us into the audit instead of a review. And under current law, there is no exemption for that. But, you know, when I look at that, I kind of think, well, that's not very significant, $17,000. It could have been any $17,000. Maybe they had overtime. Maybe they bought something. And so I guess I'm struggling with this a little bit, unless we could be sure. I guess what I'm thinking is these non-recurring transactions. I think there's a lot of judgment as to what is and what would not be there, and I could see governments calling me and saying, you know, we paid overtime this year. That's unusual. We don't usually do that. I expect this year fire districts, because of the expected drought in Oregon this year, I expect that there will be tons of expenditures and greater, you know, for firefighting and stuff like that that did not happen. Should that be one of these non-recurring? I don't know. But if we wanted, I guess my thought is that if we wanted to have this kind of example, then, and you wanted to put that in there, then maybe the audits division could help this, I suppose, by defining what those situations would be. And they would be something, as we just spoke about, an issuance of a one-time grant, or the issuance of some debt, or perhaps a one-time bequest. Some governments get one-time requests. You know, I get a couple $100,000 that's given to them. Or this year, a little city decides to build a fire hall, a police station or something like that. So I guess what I'm doing is I'm just trying to explore this and try to figure out what the intent is.
Okay. I think the intent is pretty clear. And I think that what it is at issue, you know, I'll get to you in just a minute, Representative. I think what is at issue is how to describe that intent in statute. And I think that we will have opportunity to explore this, since we are not going to be moving this bill today, members of the committee. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, but the other part of this is the secretary may not grant a municipal corporation exemption under this subsection in more than two consecutive years. So, and you're talking about a municipality with a $600,000 or less budget here. So, or an entity. It may be a cemetery, 501c3 or whatever, some kind of a district, LID or something of this nature. Example, believe it or not, this touches some cities. Like the city of Granite, there's 34 people in it, and their budget does not exceed this threshold. So, I think the key here is the intent, and I think that you're going to have anomalies. It doesn't matter what you do, you will have those. But the key here, in my opinion, is the 2 years. You can't do it more than twice.
Before you respond, we're not talking here about 501(c)(3)s. We are talking about municipal corporations. Let's get that on the record. I think we're caught sort of in a wording dilemma here. I think it's solvable, and if you'd respond to that, Mr. Hopkins, we'll move on.
Chair Berger. I guess from an auditor standpoint, when I think about non-recurring, I think about single issues. And when I look at this where it says not more than two consecutive years, I wonder why it's not more than just 1 year.
And I think the argument is these are very small entities, and how much time, it's sort of the old 80-20 rule, if I could invoke it here. We are trying to do the people's business and protect the public through this audit process, but you can spend an awful lot of time digging in little, you know, under a microscope and miss some big things because you're occupied elsewhere. And I think this is where we're trying to reach something that is workable and serves both the public's need and to have these audited and to do it in an intelligent way that doesn't spend too much time in the wrong places. I would characterize it thus. And as I said, I think we are going to be looking at amendments here anyway, so I will, at the end of this session, sort of probably assign a little work group on this, if you'd hang with us a little, stay with us a little longer. Is there anything else from this, Mr. Hopkins? Thank you very much for bringing this forward. Hasina Squires, would you like to come forward? And then I'm going to ask Perry Anderson. Is it Anderson?
Can't do that.
Okay. So that, you can come up and sit just to save time if you'd like.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Hasina Squires here today on behalf of the Special Districts Association of Oregon, representing approximately 900 special districts throughout the state. Many of the districts that we're talking about, if you look at the chart that was prepared, are rural fire protection districts, not mainly cities. We're supportive of the bill's intent to increase the threshold in a very limited manner. There is another piece of legislation in the House Audits Committee that goes significantly further to increase those limits, and we're not supportive of that. But this bill seems to be somewhat reasonable, a 10% increase in municipalities or local governments that would qualify, who would not have to comply with auditing requirements and instead would fall under the lower threshold. With respect to the issue that Mr. Hopkins raised, I don't know how you would really describe in statute those type of issues, so I maybe would just leave it to common sense.
Okay.
And I do understand that the CPA's association has amendments, and we're also supportive of those amendments.
Okay. Thank you. Questions of Hasina? Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm Perry Ankerson. I'm a CPA. Work for Polly Rogers and Company in Taggart and represent the Oregon Society of CPAs, Madam Chair and committee members. Thank you for allowing me to speak on this. I've got a one-page deal because that's all that I'd ever want to read anyway. handout for you. I only had three options. I had neutral and oppose and support the bill. So I guess I checked oppose, but I'm not sure that that's exactly right. So hear me out if you would, please. I see the major issue here, which is an issue that I think we generally support, that the limits on audits and reviews were initially established in 1977. It's been a long time since that. And if there was any magic to those numbers back in 1977, certainly inflation has increased those a great deal. Now, I'm not sure what that magic is. And I think so, considering adjusting those limits may be something that you definitely want to do as part of the people's business, as you mentioned, Madam Chair. Amount of that is a question. I think a major issue for you folks is, what do you want to do with accountability of the smallest districts? The issue really is out there on a very, very practical level. The smallest districts are able, simply because of the dollars that are going through, to have the to not hire the best talent to do their accounting, to do their general management, and those sorts of things. Is that do you want to include some of the smaller districts or exclude them from any sort of tune-up, be it a review or be it an audit by some outsider, and just say, okay, that's fine. Now, as you mentioned, Madam Chair, they do have a performance bond, but nobody would know to call in the performance bond unless somebody brought up an issue. So that's all out there. And I don't have an answer for that. That's literally a political issue with a small p. And so that's fine there. The issue that Phil brought up is, I think, troubling. I think it's difficult for the Secretary of State to grant an exemption on some fairly amorphous sorts of rules out there. But then again, the question again I think arises, is that when you want to grant an exemption? Do you want to grant an exemption from auditor review when the government does something big? Isn't that the time that maybe you want to get that transaction done rather than the routine ongoing basis of that? There's also another issue that's out there. Those are the other bill that I mentioned in my testimony toward the bottom, House Bill 2382. That initially got started because a small district, which basically only taxed and then passed substantially all of their money onto another municipal government to provide fire protection in this particular case, got caught in an audit, had to have what they considered an expensive audit, and frankly, for 14 checks in and maybe that many out, yeah, it was kind of an expensive audit. So we're suggesting some wording changes to that other bill, which I think maybe could be incorporated in this bill, maybe even better, because I think this is a better bill, frankly, to provide an exemption in the situation where a government simply passes their money through in the reality, passes their money through. That's a, you know, there's going to be no issue in that. So I would suggest and put a, you know, a possibility of some wording to that certainly could be massaged a great deal. So that's those are the issues we have. So I'm not sure that's really opposing the bill. In fact, I don't think it is. But in any case, Madam Chair, you indicated maybe a work group on that, and I would like to be considered to be on that, and I think we could get that done. Jerry Burns, who I believe had something to do with introducing this, didn't talk to me, didn't talk to our committee. I think we could work that out before the bill got in. Had he done that? He's a friend of mine, so we can maybe work that out.
Thank you, Mr. Ankerson. Questions?
Yeah, I would just suggest that you talk, give Jerry a call.
First thing I heard about Jerry was yesterday, and I emailed him this exact testimony and a couple other things.
Some pot on the press?
Yeah, we'll see if he picks up his email.
Thank you. Further questions, Representative Escobar?
Not a question, but we do. Well, go ahead. I have some other changes that we need to make as well on this bill on language changes.
I wondered if there are no further questions, I wondered if the counties wanted to weigh in or there were other testimony that was going to be offered. No. See none. Thank you very much,
thank you.
Mr. Ankerson. If I could frame this a little bit, I have had a conversation with the chair of the audits committee. He is aware that we are moving forward with this particular bill. I would be very interested to see what that bill, by the way, is much larger than this one. And if he moves forward with it, then he knows to take this piece out of that bill because we are working that this particular piece here. I have also heard that there's a few problems, and I'm kind of alerting you, Representative Esquivel, since you're going to be the work committee here, that on page 2, line 27, where it says the accountant shall furnish, there's problems with that. The original language was that the municipal corporation shall furnish, and I think that, in my opinion, would be far better language because otherwise there, you assume that there is an accountant that's doing this, and that may not be exactly right in these small special districts. So with the testimony that's just been heard and some of the issues around the wording, I'm going to ask Representative Esquivel and Representative Buckley, since his name is also on this bill, to meet with the CPAs, Mr. Hopkins and Hasina Squires, who certainly has a huge interest in this, and work through some wording that and anyone else that you see as being helpful to the process you can consult with, okay, to try and come with some wordings that is agreed upon.
Kara will be setting that up.
And Kara will set that up for you.
I would also like to include League of Oregon Cities.
You're nodding.
I will include League of Oregon Cities.
Thank you.
Thank you. Although you could always ask for their opinion without the official, okay? And they'll give it to you.
No
exactly.
Problem. They're not back.
Okay, are we clear on where we're going with this bill? Thank you very much. I'm going to close this public hearing on House Bill 2911. Where's my agenda?
I didn't mean it that way.
Okay.
Nice try.
Now, let's go to a work session on House Bill 2649. Kara?
Thank you. You'll recall...
And I'm opening it.
Yeah. You'll recall, Madam Chair, members of the committee, that House Bill 2649 allows municipal corporations to post annual budget summaries on a website after publishing the title and the budget summary and the uniform resource locator in a newspaper of general circulation. What this did was add a fourth option to local governments on how they could go about posting their budget summary prior to adopting a budget for each fiscal year. You asked for amendments to this bill that included a phone number to call for information and a fax number and a few other items. And so you have dash two amendments before you today for 2649. I'd be happy to walk you through those. You want to pull those up in your stack. Section three would, under the amendments, would read: a municipal corporation that chooses internet website publication of materials required to publish under ORS 294, blah, 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 shall also publish in one or more newspapers of general circulation within the general boundaries the items that you asked for. So the title of the budget, the URL, a notice, and then we've added a notice of time and place at which the budget document, as approved by the budget committee, may be discussed with the governing body, and a subsection D, a phone number and street address to which a request for a facsimile or a paper copy of the budget summary may be directed. Sub 2 is a municipal corporation receiving a request for the copy of the budget of this section shall deliver to the requester a copy of the budget summary by mail or facsimile. And I see now that Damon Elder is in the room. Damon is a legislative assistant to Representative Barnhart, who was in charge of drafting these amendments and knows more about them than I do. If you have questions of him, that would be wonderful.
And if I could just point out that my boss is actually on his way here, so he might be able to answer questions.
I believe that the committee, I'm going to give you guys a few minutes to look these over, these amendments. I believe they kind of speak to some of the issues that we were discussing when we first heard this bill with regard to sort of an expansion and explanation of what exactly what would be in the newspaper if internet posting is allowed. Do you have questions of Kara or questions that arise from these amendments?
The only question I had is how do the community newspaper folks, what is their perception?
They have been alerted to these amendments.
Okay.
Their testimony is on record.
Okay. Just curious.
Thank you, Representative Galizio. Representative Esquivel.
Yeah, Madam Chair, and I think the one thing that we need to realize is this is going to save, and I say this plural, millions of dollars per year for municipalities, counties, school districts, you name it, and it's going to save a substantial amount of money per year to be able to take that money and put it back into the exact purpose of what the money was originally intended for. So, and by the way, I'm a co-sponsor of this bill, and here is Representative Barnhart here, so we're glad to see him. These are good changes. I don't see any problem. It's the ones that we talked about.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Barnhart has arrived, and if I would invite his comments on the amendments. We're under discussion of the amendments. Representative Barnhart, if you'd like to.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Phil Barnhart, State Representative, House District 11. These amendments were drafted in response to requests from the Department of Revenue, who were concerned about making sure that we had all the I's dotted and the T's crossed, and they added a number of points to the bill through these dash two amendments that we that we had not considered, and I think they speak pretty clearly for themselves. The object was to make certain that the notice that was published in the newspaper was sufficient to give actual notice to those reading the newspaper who were interested in doing it, and contained all the details that a notice of that sort ought to contain. The Department of Revenue is better at that than I am, and so we included their suggestions.
And Representative Barnhart, we thank John Phillips from the Department of Revenue for his good work, and Damon Elder for his good work on this particular bill.
And I do also.
Any further questions? As soon as we get our member, Representative Cameron, back.
You have to check his email.
I would invite a motion on the amendment.
Madam Chair, I move the dash two amendments to House Bill 2649.
Representative Sumner moves the dash two amendments to House Bill 2649 without objection. So moved. Representative Sumner.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2649 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Representative Sumner moves House Bill 2649 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
As amended.
As amended, I'm sorry. House Bill 2649 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Without objection. So moved.
Sorry.
Representative, do I have a carrier?
Sure.
Representative Barnhart.
Representative Barnhart, do you want to carry this bill? It is your bill.
I'd be happy to.
And I'll help you as well.
I'd be perfectly happy to do that.
Representative Esquivel, as a member of the committee, would you like to carry this bill?
Well,
or you want to share the honor?
I'll share the honors with
you. I will assign carriers Representative Esquivel and Representative Barnhart. Thank you very much. And I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2649 with thanks to all, and adjourn this House General Government Committee.
Thank you
very much. Okay.